Hey everybody, Stu Smith here, going live. Hope you are doing well. Today we're going to chat a little bit about overtraining or under recovery. Which is it? I will tell you this: 9 times out of 10, it's under recovery. Yes, you can do too much and hurt yourself and be exhausted, but your recovery, your lack of recovery, is likely going to be the bigger culprit when you are training regularly, just doing normal workouts. You know, a poor night's sleep, bad nutrition on a day, poor hydration, electrolytes, you know, and you've just had a recipe for feeling all of the symptoms of overtraining. It's a fact. In fact, I would say the two biggest issues for people not making it through hard selections is hydration and electrolytes, especially when it's hot and humid. But, you know, if you want to end your spec ops journey real quick, don't keep track of your hydration and electrolytes. That's the two quickest ways to do it, because all it takes is a cramp and you fail a tread. All it takes is a, you know, leg locking up on you and you fail a run and you're out, right? You get full body cramps. Now you got to get an IV. You might be able to get back into training after that IV, but you might not. So your ability to stay on top of sleep, nutrition, flexibility, mobility, hydration, and electrolytes all will answer your training issues. Now, if you're training really hard, that needs to be doubled up big time. Otherwise, you can have those overtraining effects. And if you want to see a list of those overtraining effects, I have this article here. Let me see where that is. See where my... So I've written about and talked about this a lot. In fact, I'm going to show you this article and you'll see what I'm talking about. Let's see. Here it is. Recovery, training systems, periodization, and all that. So check out this. This is a good article. I'll put the link. In fact, I'll copy and paste this link right here, and I'll put it in the comment section over here on Instagram and over here on YouTube. You guys can see that. But the title of this article is, I'll just share it with you, Recovery, Training Systems, Periodization, Rest, De-Stress, Mobility, Nutrition, and Sleep. Pretty much everything I just mentioned there. And check out this non-scientific pie chart. If you can look right here, sleep is our number one recovery tool. Nutrition, almost just as important. Most nutritionists will say sleep is important. Most sleep doctors will, they're about half and half. I've seen half of them like say, yeah, sleep is more important than nutrition. But then some of them will say nutrition is just as important. So anyway, I put this non-scientific pie chart here just to show you 90% of your recovery comes down to your sleep and nutrition. So if you're spending all your money on a whole bunch of other stuff like this missing 10% right here, where most people spend all their money on ice baths and heat and supplements and outsourcing massages and all that stuff, that's great. You know, sometimes that's very helpful, but sleep, nutrition, number one, number two. All right. But anyway, this article just keeps on going. Optimal performance is the mastery of recovery. Longevity is the mastery of recovery. Here's a little tipping scale that typically kind of shows what life is doing to you, right? If you can have recovery tools, sleep, rest, good food, and water on one side of that scale, and work, life, training, stresses from life on the other side and that stay in balance, you're good to go. But all it takes is a little bit more stress, a little bit more work, a little bit more training, and you got to work on that recovery even more. So try to draw some just observations, you know, just kind of give you an explanation visually. But anyway, this is a public service announcement on the symptoms of overtraining. All right, you guys probably can't read that, so I'll just read some of them for you. Underperformance, psychological changes, weight loss, stomach upset, excessive sweating, minor infections, always sick, reduced VO2 max, slow heart rate, or increased heart rate at rest, depression, loss of appetite, apathy, anxiety, irritability, so mood disturbances, and then sleep disturbances. That's the worst part of it, is like sometimes it will affect your sleep. So if you really want to get a good night's sleep, maybe take a day off from hard physical activity, do some stretching, easy cardio, something like that. Don't go hard, and then get a good night's sleep that night. Don't do it late at night. If you're working out late at night, you may find that 3 or 4 hours later, you still can't go to sleep. So, you know, if you're trying to do a night shift, that's a great time to work out, because that will keep you awake for a lot more than normal. But it will interfere with your sleep if you're working out late. Like I would say, within 2 to 3 hours of you trying to go to sleep and you're working out, that will interfere with your sleep. And some people have weird dreams with it as well. I've had that a few times. But anyway, the rest of this article goes on to showing you more recovery articles. As you can see, I've written at least 25 articles on that. And then we did podcasts on all of this as well. So there's one, probably about another 25 podcasts on just recovery and overtraining and periodization, all that stuff. So that is a good way to end this introduction. And let's take some questions and see where we are. In fact, that was a question from the other day that I didn't answer. Somebody asked a question. I run 25 miles a week. I swim 6,000 yards a week. I lift calisthenics 4 times a week. Just this week, I've experienced the following. An easy 4-mile run, heart rate skyrocketed up to near max heart rate levels. And it was just a jog. Lethargic during work. General soreness in my legs. Feeling slightly sick without actually having a cold. Running and swimming have been much slower this week. Have any of your candidates experienced this type of overtraining? Is this overtraining? And I said, here, real quick, here's some answers that it could be. So here's what you also have to consider. Lower calorie intake, so you're not sufficiently fueled. Allergies could be affecting how you're feeling and how you're breathing. Excessive caffeine consumption before a run or a swim. If you're jacked up on pre-workout, or, you know, even a couple cups of coffee before you go do some cardio, your heart rate's going to be elevated artificially. And that can definitely get you closer to your max heart rate with less effort, right? So anytime I do cardio, I'm like, I avoid all caffeine. You know, some people say it works. Some people say it's helpful. Not, I don't know. But all I know is I feel like I'm having a heart attack if I do some caffeine before a run. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm more sensitive to that caffeine. What else? Inadequate sleep quality. Can you overtrain? Yes. But have you progressed logically over the months? Like, have you built up to those 25 miles and 6,000 yards, or did you just arbitrarily start doing this? You know, so there's some questions you need to ask. Did you progress logically to your current level of activity? If you did not, could be an overtraining issue. Need to back off a little bit. But really, in the end, overtraining, under recovery, same thing. It's going to feel the same way. All right. So let's take some questions. Looks like there's several that just popped up. Can you recommend which book to help going, please? What is this? Can you recommend me which book is going to help him, please? Did I miss a first question? Oh, okay. I see. Special Forces, I wanted to purchase a book of yours that could help him pass the fitness test. The fitness test is 1 mile, 5 pull-ups, push-ups, sit-ups. I would go with Calisthenics and Cardio. I don't have a copy of it here, or I would show you, but go to Calisthenics and Cardio. And I will tell you this. Fitness as a gift to someone usually doesn't work. In fact, I tell people all the time, even with my online coaching, when somebody says, hey, I want to buy my wife or my son or, you know, somebody this coaching plan, I say, don't do it. Just don't do it, because they need to be more invested than you in their training. I'm not saying that this is that type of situation, but I've just seen fitness as a gift not go over well for anybody. Your husband giving your wife a gift of fitness may not be good, unless she is like a hardcore fitness buff and wants new fitness stuff, right? Just trust me on that one. You don't want to do that. So invest in yourself, not others. Fitness wishes. Love the TFR about sleep at Buds with you and Jeff. Yeah, that's a good one. That's on that page as well. I definitely would say under recovery, especially when it comes to a good quality of sleep. I don't mean duration of sleep. Yes, quality of sleep is big time. Do you regularly have protein shakes or other supplements? Yeah, I would say regularly I do. I have like B12 vitamins, but I also take a multivitamin. Let's see what else I do. Some omega-3s. And I do have some whey protein and collagen protein shakes. So that's about it. Been doing your PST challenge and your article that states 4 weeks maximum test week 5. What should the rest of week 5 consist of? How to deload, or does it progress into different training? Well, you need to get on a program after you do that. I mean, that's just a quick challenge to get your PST ready, especially if you're like on the bubble or have some plateaus. That's a great way to do that. My advice is get on a program. You know, depending on what that PST is, I would suggest either phase 1 or phase 2, 3, just to continue on with the next steps of your training. I found the same thing when I asked a friend to go to the gym with me or start working out with me. It's always an unintentional insult. It is. Yeah. I've been there myself. Yep. I can't get my runs under 10 minutes per mile. Any advice? I do a lot of heavy lifting. Well, there's one problem. If you really want to get your runs less than 10 minutes a mile, might want to lay off the heavy leg lifts for a little bit and do air squats and lunges, because it's going to be part lungs and legs. You need to get your heart and lungs in a certain condition by being able to run. And you need to also get your legs in a condition to be able to do movement, high repetition, body weight movement. So calisthenics, squats, and lunges are a great leg day if you're trying to get better at running. Now, if you're a power lifter and you just want to add some running, that's a different story, right? But my advice is, if you want to get faster, lay off the leg days, you know, and consider your cycles of fitness. You know, do a lift cycle where you focus on strength, and then do a cal and cardio cycle where you focus on endurance and muscle stamina. Next thing you know, you come back around to your strength cycle again after a cycle of cows and cardio, and you're even better with your strength because you have more endurance. You can do more sets. You can get stronger versus just lifting year round or just running year round. You know, cycle through. Your body needs a break. Can the runs, high volume, body weight exercises, endurance train stunt muscle growth? How do I program long runs into muscle building programs? That's a tough one. Here's the problem is if you're trying to get good at long distance running, like a fast pace, timed run events, while you're lifting heavy, chances are you're not going to get stronger and you're not going to get faster. So once again, understand the concept of seasonal, tactical, fitness, periodization, where it actually balances everything into a year's worth of cycling of cows and cardio, strength and power, speed and agility. You know, all of those elements of fitness work real well together. But when you start combining the two, they tend to conflict with each other and you get better at neither. But if you cycle them in different 6, 8, 12-week cycles, you can actually see big improvements and then go back to other, you know, other elements of fitness that you want to work on. But I will say this, you can maintain all of it. Just improving in one or the other requires a little more focus on that weakness. So once you're there and you're happy with your strength and your endurance, maintaining it, that's the easy part. Because you can mix it all together and maintain it pretty well. But I still like to cycle it through no matter what. I've been doing this type of training for 25 years now. And it has taken me from 30 years old and pretty broken to 55 years old and still getting after it. Any idea why I get, and all my guys do this periodization program, by the way, even the young guys that are going spec ops. Any idea why I get a sharp pain in the front of my head when I'm at the bottom of a pool? Yeah, it's called water pressure. All right. Google. In fact, I wrote an article on it just last week. It's up on military.com. It's called the Valsalva Maneuver Diving, Stu Smith. Let's see what we got here. How to equalize pressure and relieve head pain while underwater. Here, this is just for you. Right? A lot of people, you know, I'm surprised that people ask that question, but I realize not everybody's used to scuba diving or going deep underwater. Yeah, it's water pressure. You got to equalize the water pressure in your sinuses and ears when you're down that deep. And it's a real easy process. I just put a link in there. You can figure out more about it. What's a good running pace? Well, it depends. What are you trying to do? Trying to finish a marathon? You know, 8, 9 minute mile running pace is pretty good if you just want to finish. If you want to win a marathon, got to be down there by 5 minute miles, right? You want to crush a fitness test? My advice is try to get your 6 minute mile to a comfortable level for a mile and a half, 2 mile, 3 miles, and you're going to be in top of the class. If it's a longer run, say 4, 5, 6 mile run, 7 minute mile pace is a good acceptable pace for that. And yes, that answer was for going spec ops. All right. You guys over at YouTube been taking all my questions. Let's see what you guys got over here on Instagram. I'll just start from the top. If you're still with us, let's see. I recently got to do Bud's obstacle course, found my mobility was a problem on the Weaver. Yes. My advice is work on some hip and torso mobility. Shoulder mobility definitely will get you through that Weaver a lot easier. Caffeine use before workout. I don't do it unless I'm lifting only. I'll maybe have some I drink unsweet tea, so. But I usually save my caffeine for after a workout and when I'm sitting at a desk typing. I'm currently at your phase 2-3 program right now. What type of runs would you suggest incorporating into the week to reach 20-35 mile goal? Thanks for everything you do. I would say this, that workout is pretty set on goal pace running. There's some fast interval stuff in there. If you wanted to add up some mileage to get it up there, eventually it will be up 25-30 miles. But my advice is just do a nice zone 2 run to build up to that kind of mileage. I think that's a logical addition to any running program that you're on that is not personally written for you and you want to add some miles, just add a zone 2 day to it. But it also depends. You need to work on speed. You might want to add a sprint day to it. So kind of depends. I have to give you credit because you deserve it beyond measure. Well, thank you. It's been 20 years and your special tactics book undoubtedly helped me through the CCT pipeline. Your book till today is inside. All right, cool. Well, thank you. Oh, inside the schoolhouse used by many to train up to the standards. That's awesome. I tell you what, I updated it right here. This thing is it. That was a fun book to make. I got a lot of PJ guys, Air Force Special Warfare guys that are in our area now. And, whether it's ROTC guys or guys that are enlisting and that IFT and OFT program, I really like seeing people train for because it's a really good combination. Then all the swim skills you guys have to do is legit. So good job. How often should one do a deload week to avoid overtraining? That's a good question. I would tell you this. When I'm lifting, I tend to need a deload week more than when I'm doing calisthenics, running, and swimming. It seems like my central nervous system does not get as taxed when I'm doing calisthenics, no matter what the volume, and running and swimming. However, lifting, I find like every fourth week, I like to take a week and go lighter. And remember, a deload is not a day off or a week off. A deload is working on a different element of fitness, changing the intensity, changing the volume. All of those things can be a deload for you. So you can still lift, but maybe lift 50% of what you were doing the 3 weeks prior. Do that every fourth week. But what we like to do in our block periodization models, which, all of these programs here, in fact, you can see it here, spring training. This is what we're doing right now. Spring training, increase endurance, maintain strength, 3-to-1 block periodization. What does that mean? 3-to-1 block periodization means we do 3 weeks of cows and cardio progression. It's spring for us, so we're running progression. Cows and cardio are getting tougher. And then we do a 1 week strength week where we deload the run, cut it about 50% volume, and we deload our reps in half with calisthenics, but we add weights every day. And that 3-to-1 block periodization model, especially in the spring, has worked very well for people who are trying to maintain their hard-earned gains from the previous winter lift cycle. And people who are still just need a little bit of break every fourth week from adding, 15% mileage every week. And sometimes that fourth week deload is perfectly timed just so people don't aggravate the IT band, or they don't aggravate shin splints or knee tendonitis, whatever. And I have seen fewer injuries with that 3-to-1 block periodization model. And you can do it with anything. You don't have to do my programs with it. You go 3 weeks of cows and cardio, 1 week of lift. You can go 3 weeks of lift, 1 week of cows and cardio. And it's a great fourth week deload that helps you work on other elements of fitness that you need to work on versus trying to just do everything. So it's kind of my compromise to the guy earlier that asked, hey, I'm lifting and running and I can't get faster. I lift heavy. Why? Well, maybe try, if you like lifting, go 3 weeks of lifting, 1 week of cows and cardio, or flip it. Go 3 weeks of cows and cardio. If you really need to focus on your endurance and muscle stamina, then do 1 week of lifting as kind of like a maintenance week for your lifts. You'll be surprised. It works really well. And I've been testing it out for the last 3 years with great results. Whether you're trying to gain weight, get faster, get stronger, do more reps on a PT test, all of those. Let's see. So does sprinting and building muscle go well, or do you have to train these separately? I thought you could do sprinters and often are jacked. Oh, absolutely. Speed, agility, strength, power, all went well. In fact, what did you do the summer before fall football training? Well, I'll tell you what I did. I lifted, got strong, went outside, did some power moves, jumping, sprinting, agility work. You know, all of those things I did to get ready for football, which is a strength sport, contact sport. And I developed those really well. Luckily, afterwards, I went to wrestling, where I developed cows and cardio really well. But where I made the mistake, and I will admit this, though I wouldn't change it because I love lifting, is my junior year, they started a powerlifting team in my high school. So I just continued powerlifting all winter versus wrestling, losing weight, getting fit, all that stuff. So I turned into this powerlifting football player that was just good at strength, power, speed, and agility. I wasn't good at endurance anymore and calisthenics. Because I did that for 2 years, and then I went to the military and then just got my ass handed to me. Long story. So that is a lot of reason why I create workouts the way I do, because you focus on what you love and your strengths all the time, you're going to create these equal and opposite weaknesses. You might be super strong, but you're going to suck at endurance, right? You might be great at endurance, but you're going to be weak as hell. Right. So that's what tactical fitness is. We're trying to get good at everything, not just great at one thing and suck at something else. Would you recommend people enlist now, considering the United States is providing material support to a genocide? Shut up, Zane. Hey, Stu, how was your experience diving in the teams? Love diving, especially dives at night. Diving at night, that sucked. I mean, it was a little spooky, but I will tell you this. You're tied to a buddy, so, you know, it's nice having your buddy there with you. And sometimes it's so dark, you don't know any idea where your buddy is. So you grab this rope on him, and you just pull it. No, okay, there's my buddy. Good stuff. All right, let's see what else we got. What are your thoughts on creatine? I think it's a great supplement. In fact, if you look at all the different studies out there on supplements, creatine is probably the number one most researched supplement, and it's really good for everything. But I will tell you this, if it's misused, I've seen people's spec ops dreams end right there in a screener or whatever, you know, and they were mostly athletes that were lifting a lot. And, you know, back in the 90s is where I first was introduced to this creatine. I didn't use it, but I saw people using it. They were trying to go to Buds or some other spec ops units, and they never got through the selections because they just had bilateral cramping, whole body cramping. Because back then, the dosing wasn't really set properly, and everybody overdoses because you're going to get stronger if you drink more creatine or bigger shakes. So what was happening is in those longer events, like a spec ops selection, you just, dehydrate too quickly and you can't keep up with the hydration requirements that creatine requires. So you start cramping. So there are places for it. That is one reason why any spec ops unit won't let you bring supplements into their selection trainings. You just can't do it. Buds, no supplements. Creatine's a supplement. Take it out. And they just banned all of them. But primarily it was that one was the reason for that rule that started, because it was just ending people's spec ops dreams way too soon. I get pretty strong headaches after each swim. I'm told goggles and improper breathing could be the culprit. Any suggestions? You know what? I've also heard it could be even allergic to chlorine. So I don't know, to be honest with you. Yes, it could be tight-fitting goggles, tight-fitting mask. Could be, if your pressure in your sinuses get a little jacked up when you swim. So all of those things could be culprits, and I truly don't have an answer for you. Just, maybe have some Sudafed or clear your nasal passages with some nasal spray. Just for the first few times, I wouldn't do it every time just because it's probably not good for you. But see if that helps. And, it could be allergy season in the spring when sinuses are all jacked up anyway. Maybe get on a anti-allergy medication that might help, like Zyrtec or Claritin. But I've seen it before, and I've seen it be many different things. From allergic reactions to chlorine to just allergies and sinus pressure. Any suggestions for people older than 28 who want to go SEAL SWCC pipeline? No, same thing. Just like what we started on this show with talking about recovery. You just need to be well-versed in your recovery. Otherwise, it can definitely come back to bite you. All right, so this is a CSS critique show, so let's share some CSS. All right, I think I have them already pulled up. Let's see where they are. All right, might have to redo this. All right, here we go. All right, so this is a kind of a fun one because I got sent a rather funny man, come on, get these out of here. Can't see my stuff here. Okay, here we go. All right, so you guys see this? Yes, looks like you can. This is my, I can't find what I'm looking at. All right, here we go. So I am going to, I got too many tabs open here, getting a little confused. All right, here we go. So this is a neat one because one guy sent me a video of him swimming and with very little rest. All right, so he's got a good streamline off the wall. That I like that. Top arm, bottom arm, kick. Hey, where's the glide? Come on. Top arm, bottom arm, kick. Hold the glide. What? Come on, I can't even count Mississippis on this one. I should be able to say one Mississippi, two Mississippi, pull. So this is basically a no-glide CSS, which, is a way to not really be effective in your glide. right? And be efficient with your glide. So let's go here. Let's see if you guys can see this. All right. So now if you notice this, this is the same guy. He sent this. Let me start over again. So good kickoff. I like the double arm pull, though I will say that that right there, whenever your back broaches the surface, it's like just putting on the brakes. And you notice you lost all of your momentum off the wall. So here's the problem with this one. Look at this. Top arm, bottom arm, kick. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four. If I can count to four, you're gliding too long. And you're not really gliding because you're just wasting a lot of energy with these flutter kicks. And you were really slow. I mean, that was, you're doing this 50-yard swim in a minute 10. So very slow. You see you're losing momentum every stroke. There's just no speed to it. So this I call the Goldilocks situation, okay? And what I mean by that is, one was no glide, and the other was way too much glide. You need to be somewhere right in the middle, okay? And what I mean by that is you need to be right at that 2 to 3 Mississippi pull. And what you'll find by doing that is there'll be no loss of momentum per stroke. So the first one that we showed, there was a waste of momentum because there was no glide at all. The second one we showed was a loss of momentum, and it just took forever to get across. You need to go somewhere in the middle and cut that rest and that glide in half. You know, from the second video, cut it in half and add 2 second glide to the first one. And right in the middle is where you're going to find your happy place on this swim. And that's going to keep you really efficient with that. All right, let's see here. Do you have any lifting standards for buds as far as percentage of body weight? I'd say 1.5 to 2.0 times your body weight for squat and deadlift. So a 200-pound guy be able to squat 300 pounds. That's good. I mean, not just once, but multiple reps, 5 reps, maybe. Maybe make it a 3 to 5 rep max. Same for deadlift. 1.5 to 2.0. And then bench. You know, I like to see body weight bench done double digits. So 10 to 20 plus if you can. I'm not really that concerned about 1 rep max on the bench. More so just body weight bench stuff. That's probably going to be more applicable for buds. And then weight vest pull-ups, that's a good one. Grip is a good one. So, you know, you can work your grip with weight vest pull-ups. You can work your grip with deadlifts. You know, all of those things are going to come in really handy. And it just builds some durability for you with your, just whenever you're under loads from rucking, boats, logs, you know, fireman carries, all that stuff. What are the limits and rules about supplements at Buds? I just told you, can't do it. 0. Did you guys ever get rashes, irritated skin from swimming in pools too much? Not ocean, but from chemicals. If so, what did they do to address it? Well, I mean, yes, in preparation, you know, we swam all the time in pools, very rarely in open water. I would say dry skin was probably the irritation that we got. And you just need to shower real well after every swim. And if you need to, use some kind of lotion with your shower and get the soap off. There's some anti-chlorine shampoo that you can get that evidently cancels out all the chlorine, turns it into salt water. I think it's mostly like baking soda type shampoo. Make salt water out of chlorine or something. some kind of chemical reaction occurs in there, and it just helps you get the chlorine off your body. But yeah, that's how we addressed it. OG book is coming along, I promise you. Sorry it's been such a delay, but I've actually changed focus on it and creating a whole lot of new exercises that I haven't done before in previous books. So it's just taking a little longer to get pictures and even the selection of those exercises completely done and make sure they're useful for the 50 and older crowd. But I promise you I'll get on it. Let's see. Any other questions over here? Nope. Any advice for not adding too much oxygen debt when doing a wall kick with dolphin kick to the double arm pull? I notice I get far, but building too much debt slows down in later reps. Yeah, that's a conditioning issue. My advice is just take out the breaststroke pull out altogether if it's causing you that much issue, or take your conditioning up to another level so it doesn't, you can handle the that much time underwater. Because I will tell you this, if you're really doing a good breaststroke pullout, you're probably holding your breath 8 to 10 seconds every time you turn around and kick off the wall. And that's not easy to do. That requires another level of training. But I will tell you this, I have seen people take out their breaststroke pullout, get that second breath or that missing breath. Yeah, I guess you get two breaths per lap now. So read this article and it may make some sense for you. And it's called To Pull Out or Not, the CSS Debate. It's a fun one. Yeah, you guys over here on Instagram, check that out. Let me see what next I have for All right, I'm back. Sorry about that, folks. I lost you there for a second, and I am back. So I clicked the wrong button, believe it or not, but that is what happens when you got too much stuff going on at the same time. All right, let me show this. See, those were the first two I showed. Let me show this CSS here real quick. Once it's up on here. So this will probably be my last one because not sure what happened with that. Okay, here we go. All right, so you guys should be able to see this. I like this top arm, bottom arm, kick and glide. So this is one Mississippi, two Mississippi pull. So there's a 3 second Mississippi. I like that. That looks good. Let's see what happened here. Froze up. All right. So top arm, bottom arm, kick. Now here's my issue with this one. All right. So my issue with this one is, see that pause in between the top arm and the bottom arm? There shouldn't be a one Mississippi, two Mississippi pull. There shouldn't be a 3 second pause almost between your first and second arm pull. In fact, you should turn with the top arm and immediately pull that bottom arm to inhale. So that will fix this because it is really slow. And I think you're just wasting some momentum with this glide phase right there before you go into the next stroke. Does that make sense? So speed up the first and second arm pull a little bit and see how that feels for you. Cool. All right. Let's see. A couple more questions and then we'll call it a day. I don't know what is up with my Instagram over here, but it is not liking me. Okay, here we go. Okay, here we go. Last question. Hey, Stu, follow up on the dive question. Anything ever bump into you in the night swims? I know Andy Stump said he would always get body slammed and tell himself, if I don't look, it didn't happen. Yeah, there was always something that bumped into you. You never knew really knew what it was, but I agree. Don't be too inquisitive. I will tell you this. We did some diving down in Key West at night, but it's crystal clear water down there, so you can kind of see a lot. We're down like 20 feet bottom of this pier, and you know, so lights from the piers coming down. It's kind of almost well lit down there, almost. So we're still in the shadows, but right above us, you could see where the light didn't quite penetrate. And all of a sudden, we saw this big-ass shadow swim by. Didn't know what it was. And I just remember my buddy and I getting back-to-back, you know, with our knife. We're just waiting for a mini-sub to come pick us up. And that was a funny moment. But we found out next time he came by, it was just a tarpon. So saw those big old scales about this big. But that thing was at least 8-9 feet. And yes, it pucker factor was there. I know you said it, but how do you upload videos for you to critique? Most people just DM me. Or they email me, stu@stusmith.com. Stu, I was in 175. I was in 180. At first, and then got rolled into 182, graduated 182. I was back. Yeah, San Diego has really changed since the 80s and 90s, for sure. A lot of fun. Neat to see. I need to go back. All right. Looks like I got everything there. So if I didn't answer your question, go ahead and just email me. Stu@stusmith.com. I'll get on that question for you. In fact, one of the guys emailed me the other day, and it's an Ask Stu article tomorrow. Already wrote it. It's about the overtraining one. But yeah, if you're at Stu Smith Fitness, check it out. There's a lot of articles there. In fact, just wrote a new one today about teamwork and communication. It's a good one for ways to consider doing workouts as a team. You know, you can also use Live15 coupon code, save yourself 15% over there on programs at Stu Smith Fitness. And if you need help with the CSS, check out the TikTok page or my Instagram Reels. There's a ton of videos over there. I even have another probably 100 CSS videos on YouTube too. So check those out. Plenty of CSS critiques out there floating around. So check, see if those help you. Okay, I guess that's it, folks. I will see you next week on Monday. We'll do another live Q&A and talk about what you guys want to talk about. So until next time, you guys have a good one.